can we afford this person? I think we can't afford not to have them. I don't care if I have the don't have the money in the account.
Get the fuck out.
Because it's like, I can't sell franchises if I don't have a logistics guy. Yeah. I can't sell franchises without an advisor and a CEO. And a, like, I think of what is the most sellable product. And then I'm going to go make sure that that we have that sellable product. And then I'm going to go sell it. Real business.
Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
We created a text hotline just to add value to you guys as listeners. 435-515-3577. If you guys have questions, anything to do with your taxes, shoot us a text.
You want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be successful? Don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward.
Welcome back to the Real Business Owners Podcast with myself, Trevor Cowley, as always, Kilo G.
What up, what up?
Guys, today we have Bennett Maxwell on the show for you. Bennett's been on a hot streak lately. His batting average is really, really high in business. You know, he's seen some success in some previous businesses, and he's parlayed that into some more success, and we'll kind of go into what he's doing now with Dirty Dough and, you know, the his angle and his spin on it and his dramas that he has with it and all the fun stuff. So Bennett, welcome to the show. First off,
it's
good
to
see you again. You know, we saw you, I don't even know, maybe it was a year ago that we were in this exact same room, but not with podcast mics. We were just talking, shooting the shit, talking business. You were telling us this thing that you were going to do and showing us the cookies and this is what's going to happen. And, you know, we've kind of, from afar, watched your journey from this kind of concept in this room that you were showing us to now however many hundreds of stores that are, you know, pre-bought at this point. So it's pretty cool to watch your journey unfold.
I saw them at Apex last month and actually got to try one of the cookies, dude.
Brought them over. They're a few days old, but they were still.
I can't wait to go try them fresh because they were good.
Have you ever thought about like sprinkling a little crack in there just so for certain they come back?
As long as it's cost effective, we're
Show me the price, right? Like that's what Coca-Cola used to do, right?
Supplier.
You know, exactly. It depends on where we're getting the supplies of the flour.
No kidding.
No, obviously you've seen previous success prior to the success that you're seeing now. And I'd love to kind of go back in time a little bit and unpack some shit for the listeners, because it's cool to talk about where you're at now. We can highlight all the successes and all the fun stuff. But let's go back in time here just a little bit, because there's always a process to success, right?
Yep.
You have your own struggles, your own trials. We have our own struggles and our own trials. And that's just, that's more part of success than actually, you know, having the $1 million paycheck or being worth millions. It's the process that really a lot of people want to hear about, because most people that are listening, that's where they're at. They're going through the process. And so talk to us a little bit maybe about first couple jobs that you had and maybe some of the aha moments when you said, okay, I'm going to leave, you know, the job world that's maybe an hourly rate. And then I'm not certain, but did you go do sales prior to owning? Okay. Let's talk about that real quick, if you will.
Yeah. So, started sales pretty young. I mean, like elementary, I'm selling candy bars at school. I got the lemonade stand on the
corner. Ain't shit changed, bro, except now it's actually an entity, you know?
I was hustling. I was doing door-to-door lawn aeration sales in junior high. Somebody else would come behind and push the little thing.
Yeah.
Then I got into Cutco knives. I mean, and then to pay for sports, I had to sell cookie dough. So I guess that's when I was, when I got in. To pay for
coming full circle, huh?
Wrestling and rugby, they both did cookie dough for sponsorships.
Let me ask you this. Nice. Did you grow up, you know, in a financially unstable environment? Is that why you were a natural hustler trying to find a way to make money?
If I was going to go to football camp, I had to go sell the brewing cards, you know, those discount cards. But I think I was the only person that ever sold the businesses. I would go cold knock on businesses and sell them on a banner to support the football team.
Yeah.
Most people that do that, they go to their friends or family or some uncle or cousin. You were just going to straight strangers.
I was going to strangers. Yeah. But that's how I paid for football camp. It's like $200. I don't have $200.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go sell a banner.
Where did you grow up?
Just in Orem.
Okay. Yeah. So you're.
So it wasn't even like some of them weren't even fundraisers. You just created your own fundraiser. Or were they sponsored
the store,
fundraisers?
Yeah. I mean, the schools would say, pay for the sports and here's all your fees. And
okay.
Your
yeah.
That. Or yeah. get some go sponsors.
Yeah.
Or go sell a banner.
I remember doing yeah. a couple of those.
I never
too.
Paid for anything
yeah.
because I just went and sold it. So that's what I started out right before I served a mission, a Mormon mission. I did Cutco knives.
Okay.
Yeah. That was a big mentality switch for me because like I thought that was like.
That was door to door as well. Yeah.
Not door to door.
Over the
Costco
all referrals.
All referrals.
All referrals. So like okay. you're like sitting down at the end of the sale, like yeah. who else do you know? And then they write
give
down
me
a list
five
of 10
people. Oh,
and
10.
Then, and then wow. you tell them.
I don't even have 10 friends, dude.
And you say, set me up an appointment right now. And you don't leave till they set yeah. you up appointments with
that. Dude, right? we had an ex-employee yeah, just a few years ago come to sell me a vacuum. And I only let him in because he used to work for us.
Yeah.
And I gave him Jeremy's name to go to next. Our partner.
Yeah. Well, remember back in the day,
we it was used Craig.
To, remember back in the day, we used to put Jeremy's info on like websites and shit so that he would get random phone calls and emails just to give him shit.
Someone's paying me back right yeah. now because I'm getting like getting insurance this, quotes yeah. and everything.
Karma's,
from Tyler.
Karma's knocking yeah. on your door like 8 years yeah. later for all the shit we did with Jeremy's no,
that,
phone
that
number.
That was the Cutco live.
Yeah. Like, I love Cutco's, dude. I've got a freaking
it was intense
whole set.
Sales. But I almost didn't accept the job because, like, I went there, you know, I got a button-up shirt
yeah.
and feeling all good, do the interview. And then, you know, they offer me the job. I'm like, sweet, this is, an actual real job.
Yeah.
And training starts next week. It's 40 hours. Okay, cool. So my pay starts what next week? No.
Oh, yeah.
You don't get
no
paid
pay
for training.
Training.
And I'm like, screw you guys. I don't want to do this. And yeah. I called up my dad and I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do it. And he's yeah. like, why? I'm like, they want me to work for 40 hours for free. And he's like, what do you mean for free? They're training you. Like, people spend tens of thousands of dollars on sales training. Yeah. You're going to get it for free?
Yeah.
You're going to wow. turn it down?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
That's a good perspective.
Good perspective, yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. And then I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad shortly after that, and which kind of double reinforced that, the work to learn, not to earn. Yeah. Right. In your 20s, you're supposed to work to learn, not to earn. The money yeah. will follow.
Right.
So that stuck with me. And then I started doing the summer sales stuff. Actually, before summer sales, I did alarms. Security installs. I was the technician.
Yeah,
you sound like you're from Utah.
Yeah,
you know the typical youngster that got pulled into the door to door game.
Oh, for sure. Right, right off the fresh off the mission.
Oh like, yeah,
you're selling Jesus. How about selling
yeah,
some pests?
Yeah, like, the hardest yeah, thing in the yeah. whole world.
Let's do
is
it.
Selling religion. So if you could sell religion, you could sell just about anything. So yeah, it's like an assembly line. In Utah, all the guys that come off a mission, they're like, I've been knocking doors. I can do yep. this. And usually they do pretty well because mm-hmm. they've already dealt with rejection and the door slammed on them and all that. They have nothing to lose except for now making an opportunity to make money, yeah. which they didn't have that before, right?
I know that. I mean, that's every large door-to-door company. I mean, they're all based out of Utah for that reason. You know, and that's just the mentality, like, I can knock doors.
Free training.
Knocking doors sucks. But yeah. if you're good at it, you can make some good money. So I left security installs from Baltimore with one phone call with a buddy that was in California saying, I'm doing sales and making more money than you.
Yeah.
Literally left the next day from Baltimore, drove to California.
Oh, wow.
Because I thought, and a straight commission, obviously. Yeah. So it's like,
yeah.
what if I don't make anything? That's more risky, but work to learn, not to earn. I mean, yeah. that's what I kept telling myself. Did a half a summer because the half the summer was already done and made good money. And I'm like, I'm gonna go do this again. And I recruited a team. I think I had 40 dudes, all first year guys. I'm pretty much a first year. I've only done it for 2 years
yeah.
or for 2 months, sorry. And went out, sold, but made good money.
Yeah.
I was on track to be a doctor. I had one more semester left to graduate. Wow. Just with my bachelor's, doing pre-med, took all the chemistries and the biologies, all of that stuff. I made 250 grand in that four and a half months. And I'm like,
well,
I don't want to be a doctor anymore.
Yeah,
I don't even like blood to tell everybody it's true. I get queasy.
Yeah, I was just doing it because I just figured that was a high paying job. So I signed up to be a doctor.
I didn't know you could go do sales and make good money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that led to entrepreneurship because you're kind of an entrepreneur, right?
Oh, without a
100% commission.
Dependent on your own performance.
Yeah. And then if you want to be a manager, it's you have to go make the recruits.
Yeah.
You have to train them, convince them to move out. You know, to a different
away
state for
from
the summer.
Everything that they've known for 4 months.
The only way you get paid is if they make sales. Mm-hmm. You can recruit somebody, you can train them. If they come out and go back home, you make $0. So it was kind of, you know, you're managing all your risks, right?
Yeah.
And then after doing that for a few summers, I did solar, loved it. And then sat down with my wife. I'm like, hey, solar's cool. Should we actually like do a real job and like do it year round? She's like, sure. If we move to San Diego.
Yeah.
So I'm like, done. So I teamed up with my brother. And we started a solar company.
Older or younger?
older, which was very, so I was really good at the sales side.
Okay.
He's 13 years older than me. And he's been like, he bought a franchise when he was like 22, and that's all he's ever done is just
run the back end of a franchise. Yeah.
Not even operations, just lots of different businesses. Okay. So yeah. I learned a ton from him.
Cool.
We started that. We had our first recruit, the tongue guy.
Oh,
he
yeah.
came out and lived with us in San Diego. January of 2020.
What's his name?
Seth.
Shout out, Seth, bro. You got one of our business partners on that joke, the tongue joke. So that's an inside joke. We'll keep it inside for now. We might let that cat out of the bag one day. But
so yeah, no. So Seth comes out December or January 2020. Me, my brother, him, and yeah, we just started growing that company. And we did like the, if you guys have heard of the E-Myth Revisited.
Yeah.
My brother sat me down. He's like, we're doing this. Like, here's your org. What's our org chart going to look like in 3 years? And we just filled it up with our own heads. I'm like, this is so stupid. Why am I putting myself as a sales rep, sales manager, the VP of sales, the COO, you know, the finance.
Why are we doing an org chart when it's just three people or two people?
Yeah. But man, he kept me on track of like, we're filling this up. And within a year, we'd replaced ourselves.
Yeah.
That's when the opportunity to come buy Dirty Dough came in. And I was like, well, I'm pretty much out of solar. Like I still own the company, but I'm not doing the day to day.
Yeah.
So let me buy this existing company. And then 6 months after I bought that company, we ended up selling the solar company. And then I dove full time into
I thought you sold the solar company first and was in like some weird phase of like, what am I going to do with my life now? And
no,
then
I was
start
doing,
something
I was
else
doing both
up,
at the
you
same
know?
Time. And I'm like, this is a lot.
Yeah.
let's focus on one.
You know what? You just stating that in terms of the org chart and your name's like here, where when you see your name and his name, it just seems pointless. Mm-hmm. But doing that, it also gives you a bird's eye view of what duties would that you could target first that you want to get rid of on that org chart. You can say, well, who do we want to hire first? Well, I'm doing these five things. Why don't we hire somebody for this thing?
Yep.
And then this thing and then this thing. But at least you have like targets, right? Like it's all defined exactly, gives you the direction that you need to go. I think that's super cool that he was able to do that.
Yeah, he kind of forced me into that. And then when I did Dirty Dough, did the same thing.
Because you're a sales guy and you wouldn't have done that without him.
No.
Just like, show me a door so I can get this money.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And he's like, we got to build these CRMs with automated follow-up. I'm like, no, I'm just going to go knock the next door.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're
some
an idiot.
Do, some don't. Just move on to the next cell.
Yeah.
And he's like, dude, money's made in the follow-up, bro. You could have been waiting.
That was totally mean. We just went back and forth all the time. I was like, I'm just
going to knock the next door. You're a hard-nosed sales guy. That's why.
And he put me on track, though. So when we sold the solar company, then I dove full-time in Dirty Dough. Same thing. You know, like, what's this company going to look like in a few years? Let's start replacing ourselves. And this was June of last year.
So do you think that the experience with your brother and that initial experience that you just shared with us was a huge training ground for what you're doing now with Dirty Dough?
100%. I got lucky that I had a great brother with good business experience that was willing.
You were able
to team up with me and teach me.
And bro, here's another lesson right here. Maybe the, like that thing was just preparing him for this thing, you know?
So I told myself that because solar was so up and down, you know, it's like, what if net metering 3 goes through? That's going to kill our sales. What if this goes through? And then Facebook changes their algorithms and now we're doing all of these, the leads. And man, it was so shaky. And I invested maybe $150,000 just getting off the ground. Cause we were spending like $30,000 a month in leads.
Yeah.
And there's several points. I'm like, I'm going to lose all my money. And then I thought, this was better than an MBA though. And I only paid $150,000 and I got it in less than a year.
Yeah.
So again, I went back to justify like what's the worst case scenario? I lose all my money. How do I be positive about that? Well, this was better than an MBA.
The experience itself is just far more valuable. So
if I would have lost $150,000, I didn't sell this solar company, 100% it still would have been worth it. Because now I have a company that's worth a lot more than my solar company ever was. And I built it in a year.
Mm.
So it's
how long did you have it before you sold it?
It was 18 months.
What was the
2020 to June of 2021?
I've never sold a company. So I've always wondered like what that process is like, you know, finding a buyer. Like, how did you market it when you were hey, I'm ready to sell?
I didn't think you could sell
just happened.
A sales org.
Yeah.
I know because you figured that they could just recruit their own salespeople.
I got 1099.
Yeah.
But we did have a very robust back end system.
Okay.
And the philosophy was let salespeople sell, right? Yeah. You have a good salesperson, you promote them to be a manager. Well, they're not a good man. I'm a great salesperson. I'm a terrible manager, right? Mm. But But that's what we always do. It's like, if you're a good salesperson, you're probably going to be a great manager. If you're a great manager, you're probably a great VP of sales or a regional, whatever. It's just not true. So what we wanted salespeople to sell, managers to also go sell. So we hired people out of the Philippines. You know, they would do the leads. They would do our proposals. So a lot of companies, you know, they have the sales reps doing proposals. And it's like, let's just have them sell. Or like the managers have to come up with incentives. They have to run the meetings. They have to, you know, if we're going to pair you two up on a throwdown Thursday and whoever wins, then I have to, you know, keep track of those metrics. And then I'm going to order you lunch because you won. Well, we had all of that outsourced in the Philippines.
Wow.
So we're paying, you know, not that much. And now the managers show up, the slides are already made for them. They just have to adjust a few different things for like their training segment, all of the incentives and the tracking. So like if you would have won, you would have gotten a text on Monday, because that's our team, like our big team meeting, that said, hey, we're eating at Chipotle and you have a $15 order. Yeah. Go ahead and select your lunch. And then you show up to the meeting, you get to eat in front of everybody else. The managers don't have to think about any of that.
Yeah.
So we did set up a lot of that, the follow-up, the automation.
Do you think that setting up all that extra work was a big reason why somebody wanted to buy you?
Yeah.
Because it was just different than the other sales organizations?
We had a whole follow-up program built out as well. So if I signed you with Solar, within a few days, you're going to get cookies.
Yeah.
And then within a few days after that, you're going to get a welcome box that had, you know, how much carbon emission offsets. And you open it up and it says, you're not only saving money, you're saving the world. And it had an Avengers action figure toy.
Oh, cool.
And then they're letting their kids play with that. And then they're sending us pictures. They love that, right? And the next thing, we're ordering dinner. And again, the sales reps aren't doing anything, but they think it's coming from the sales reps.
Yeah.
They get a text, hey, we want to order you dinner. We just got your permits through. Typically, we order, you know, two large pizzas, unless you want something else. But we'd customize their order. But to streamline it, we said, this is what we typically order unless you want something else.
Because most people would be like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. We'd order them pizza. Then the day we scheduled install, we'd order them a bonsai tree to show them that how much it was called the money bonsai tree. So just show them how much the money they're saving.
Yeah.
And then the day of install, we sent them wine, you know, two bottles of wine.
Yeah.
And all of this was automated. We had people overseeing that overseas. So it was very low cost. And there's triggers to automate it all. So a lot of that, you know, that helps with referrals.
I was just going to say referral game.
I go into a customer's house who bought solar from me year and a half later. And he's like, I see the bonsai tree. Because he's now signing up some rental property or something. And I'm like, you're still taking care of my bonsai tree.
Yeah.
You know, every time you see that bonsai tree or that superhero or the magnet that we include in the welcome packet, you're thinking solar, right? Mm. So same thing, if you share that bottle of wine with somebody, the thought was, oh, you know, this wine from the solar company.
And there's two bottles. So it's like, unless you're a raging alcoholic, you're going to invite a friend or two over to sip it with you.
So that was kind of the idea. And it was awesome. Very unique.
Very unique.
And the solar process was really good for them, right? Because what other company sent five gifts in the period of, you know, 1 to 2 months for buying solar that's actually cost them $0 up front and has immediate savings. And now they're getting an incredible experience.
Yeah.
And then we've got quite a few referrals off of that.
That's pretty
cool. So, very different than anybody else. We didn't build that to think, oh, somebody's going to buy this. It was somebody that I'd sold Vivint with. He was looking at selling his company to a public company that just wanted more revenue, basically, because that's going to drive up their stock price.
Yeah.
So he's like,
they have to show
increases.
Yeah.
I have all the sales reps. He had a ton. He just got started a few months earlier, but he's already had like 50 sales reps doing tons of accounts. You guys have the back end. Let's combine our companies and sell to this company.
Okay. Yeah.
And I just ignored. I mean, he didn't pitch it like that. He just said, I want to buy your company.
Yeah,
and I'm
like,
piss off, dude. Like, you're just wasting my time.
Go away.
Yeah.
And then said it again. I'm like, no, like, not interested. Or yeah, we're interested. Talked with my brother. Didn't even talk with my brother. I was just like, nah. Him and my brother met at some solar conference. And my brother came back. He's like, we need to hear him out. I was like, all right, let's hear him out.
Yeah.
And then we ended up selling like within a month of that. It was a pretty quick process. And as soon as I exited that, I was still kind of going to be involved, but focus on Dirty Dough. And then I brought on a senior advisor for Dirty Dough, John Richards. This dude's, he had InfoSpace. They IPO'd valued at $30 billion. He's hit a lot of other home runs with, like Omniture was another big one that sold to Adobe for $1.8 billion. He was an early stage advisor and investor, a lot of other companies like that. And he's like, you got to burn the boats. So I left the salary, I left all the stock, and I'm just like, I have to jump full time into Dirty Dough. This isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So that was really good advice. Got him on. And I guess
how did you get him on? So I mean, that's that. You know, somebody that's listening, it's all good that you, yeah, everybody knows that you need, when you're trying to do something massive, you have to have eight players, right? Mm-hmm. Just is what it is. Like, you can try to do it yourself. It might take 20 years longer than it needs to. You know, again, collapse time, as we've talked about on the last few podcasts, by surrounding yourself with people who've been there, done that. So how does somebody go about finding an A player? Who did you tap into resource-wise to locate this individual and set up a meeting?
So I just sold my solar company, and then there's this three-day startup course. It's called Startup Ignition. And I'm in San Diego. I'm like, I have to fly to Utah to take a three-day course on a startup when I just built and sold a solar company in 18 months. Like, what are they going to teach me?
Yeah.
But I'm like,
I'm trying to humble yourself, barely hanging on
to my 20s right now. I'm 29, but work to learn, not to earn. I mean, that's always been my philosophy. Okay, I'm just going to go, learn, right? Like, even if I don't learn anything, but I probably will. And I didn't know anything he taught me. It was an actual business is what he was teaching me when I was kind of just flying by the seat of my pants.
Yeah.
So, and part of that training was you have to build an advisory board. This is how you structure. This is the vesting periods. This is the equity that you should offer, all of this. And I'm like, well, who better to have on my advisory board than the guy teaching me about the advisory board? So I went and pitched him on my idea. And I'm like, look at these other competitors. They're killing it. We have a way better model, way lower margins, half the labor. He's like, I've never even done anything with food. And I choose 2 to 3 companies to sit on the advisory board at a time. But yeah, I'd like to be on your advisory board. So we brought him on, and then he immediately brought one of his buddies, Steve Hart, who owns Property Management Inc., largest property management franchise in the nation.
Yeah.
Then we got him, and then we got Eric Van Horn. He's got the largest franchisor mastermind group, franchisee mastermind group, largest franchise podcast. Like, he's the expert in franchising. So now we have a good advisory board, and then now we and then let me think the kind of timeline. December of last year is when he franchised.
Yeah.
And
is that the guy that you weren't there? I think he was at the event yesterday that I was at.
Okay.
Does he know Chris Crone? Do you know Chris Crone up there?
I don't think I do.
No.
Where was the event that you went?
It was in Provo, and they had a franchise guy up there. Is he in Salt Lake?
No, he's
in. Okay, never mind. Different guy.
No, it wasn't him then.
Okay. The name sounds familiar. Eric Van Horn, doesn't that? It just sounds familiar.
He's pretty involved in like the Apex groups.
Okay, maybe like that's why. Maybe I've. So, I've yeah, I, that name rings a bell. I'm trying to connect the dots is all. Yeah.
And with Everbull.
Oh, okay.
He knows all those guys.
Okay, cool.
Speaking of Everbull, Jeff Fenster, the owner of Everbull,
right.
I watched his podcast when he was here with you.
Yeah. Oh,
that
cool.
Helped a ton.
Oh, sweet.
I met up with him because he just lived down the street from me. And early on, this was like April of last year. He's like,
did you say I heard you on the podcast? Let me link up with you.
I didn't know. I just messaged him on Instagram and he messaged me back.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Like super. Anyway, so we met up and our model was to do a machine to produce the cookies rather than hand weighing and hand balling. The inconsistency was crazy, but more so is the labor. So our model was to sell 5 franchises at a time. Your middle one has the machine and you operate it and then you distribute to your other 4. And he's like, that's a terrible model. And it was. He's like, no, you need to do all of that for them. And then they just
ship it to them.
They just get it
right to their doorstep.
So, man, what a big like
aha
talking
moment.
About
yeah.
wasting time and money and avoiding that. Thank you, Jeff. You're freaking awesome.
Yeah. Collapse so, time, just collapse as we time. Just talked yeah, about, exactly. by surrounding yourself with people who've been there, done it.
So Jeff had that. Anyways, and then I hired Jill Summer Hayes. She started a company called Maui Wowie Smoothies and Coffee.
Okay.
83. Ran it, got it up to just under 700 locations, sold it in 2015.
Wow.
And then actually St. George Company, totally nuts. It's a mobile only.
Yeah. The little cart.
Yeah.
Whatever, so
She.
That's her.
What is it?
She started.
They're totally nuts, like in the mall, the little kiosk carts things or whatever.
So they're at like 80 or 90 franchises right now. They came to her and said, hey, can you help us franchise? When they just had the concept and she took them, and then she was their CEO. They hired her on as CEO, took them from 1 to 80 or 90 in a few years. Anyways, and then she came on as CEO for Dirty Dough in December.
Oh, wow.
And man, that was a big change, right? Like having somebody that's built 2 companies for 39 years, multiple hundreds of locations.
It's different,
you know,
it?
It's like
they operate different.
Here's the ball, go run with it, right?
Yeah.
So we had the advisory board, we had the CEO. Then it's like,
so as you started gathering all these pieces, you just initially had to find the first piece. The first piece brought in the second piece because of their contact, and then did it kind of.
It's a snowball.
Did it snowball because then they kept tapping into their resources, saying, "I know this person." They da 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 da, and then they just kind of built the team.
And even before I got the advisor, I got, you know, you start with the C player and then you convince a B player to come on your team because you're like, look, I got all these C players. You could be the all-star here.
Right.
Then you get some decent B players. Then you can go recruit A players. And then with the A players, you go, you convince them, like, look at all these A players. I need you. You're an A+, but look, we already have a great team. And it just keeps kind of going up.
Yeah.
Because after, I mean, we needed someone with franchise experience to get this advisor, this first advisor. And then he brought in the second one. And then we got Jill. I guess I kind of told you the order wrong. It's like, look at these advisors we have.
Yeah.
You know, and then we got a great CEO. And then we got the third advisor. Like, look at the other advisors. Look at the CEO we have. And then it's like, look at the production guy we have. Because now the goal of Dirty Dough is to make the most simplistic food franchise model. So that's centralized production. So each store, they don't have to do their own ordering. They don't have to do their own inventory management, their own inventory, like waste, quality control. So when you compare our model to another model, what we do is we order a truckload of flour versus a 50-pound sack. That's 10%+ off, right?
Yeah.
Then you go directly to the flour manufacturer rather than
the distributor, the
Sysco, Dawn Foods,
the middle
another 10%+ off. So you get flour, sugar, butter for a huge discount. Then rather than mixing 60 to 70 cookies at a time in a little mixer with teenagers, we use a giant mixer, mix 1,000+ cookies at a time with a skilled baker. Then rather than getting the raw dough, putting on a scale, little pieces of dough till it weighs just right, rolling it on the counter, forming it, ready to be baked in a few days, we run it through a machine. And then it portions it exactly, perfectly.
Consistency.
And then it also gives us a very unique product that you can't make by hand. It's a three-layer cookie. We have the world's first three-layer cookie. So you look at a cookie, it looks like a peanut butter cookie. You break it open, there's chocolate dough in the middle, and in the very center, there's hot fudge. So typically when you go the automation route, you get a less unique product. But the machines that we found, and we're rolling out with tons of new stuff. I mean, we just ordered, it's like $850,000 more worth of machines, just attachments and things like this, so we can do like these pie cookies and these checkered cookies and things that all these other cookie companies can't copy. Unless they, I mean, we're into this $2 million before we opened our first store.
Yeah.
So it was like, I mean, our That's first awesome. Real store, I bought the company with one store, but by the time we franchised and opened up the first store, so it's just a larger barrier.
So how does a company do that? When you're like, again, this is my personal curiosity, you know, as an individual that's starting a franchise, there's a lot of obviously costs as you're talking about going into it to be able to have the infrastructure to support a bunch of these franchisees, right? So does a company like that, yours, or a company in general that's a franchise, it's like, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to do it big. They're already committed, like, before even the first one's open, like, we're going to blow this thing up. Do they go out and get a bunch of SBA loans in order to get this equipment? Do they raise capital and just help say, hey, investors will pay you 10% on your money? Like, how does somebody go about going from really not having that first store open yet, but having a couple million dollars worth of expenses and justifying that and being able to find the capital to support it?
Yeah, and it wasn't all at once. It was
Over time, of course.
Over time. And it's kind of that same, start with the C, then you go, you know, kind of test the concept. So we first bought just one machine.
Yeah.
We bought one machine, and as soon as we bought the machine, put it in our Tempe location, the original location.
Okay.
Everything, like, our labor was cut in half. You know, the consistency went up, the quality went up, and the turnover was almost non-existent, because your turnover happens when you give somebody, you know, the ballers, you come in and ball cookie dough for 5 hours. Well, we don't have that anymore. That means less training, less hiring, less interviews, job ads, uniform expenses, all of that, because now people sticking around because all they're doing is grabbing a cookie, putting it in the oven, giving it to customer.
Yeah.
So it's like, that was kind of the first thing, kind of test the model.
Can't bitch about your duties if you don't have a whole lot of duties.
Yeah. And that was, we leased that piece of equipment, you know. Okay, let's test. Okay, well, that's working. Then let's go get the advisor. Then with this advisor, now we can go start selling. And then we got the second advisor. Now we can kind of start pre-selling franchises as we're filling out our franchise documents. Money was tight the entire time.
Yeah.
I didn't have the money sitting in my account. It was 100 times where, like, scraping by the next,
you're getting money coming in and payroll. That money's right. Already allocated to the next thing, but for
it,
growth.
It was, yeah, let's get the next thing for growth. And that makes the company look better. Not look better. It makes it better.
Yeah.
And then I'm able to go get the next key player and then the next key player and then sell the next
franchisee.
Who's going to buy a franchise from me? Right.
Yeah.
I've never worked in food before. Nobody's going to buy a franchise from me. Are people going to buy a franchise from a CEO that's been doing this for 39 years?
Yeah.
more likely, right? From our advisory board. Like, that's having the team was very crucial to then selling the franchises, which gave me capital, which I immediately reinvested into more equipment. And then we got a warehouse, and then we got larger mixers, and then we got walk-in freezers. And it just very slowly. So it wasn't like we threw in money. It wasn't like,
$2 million. Let's build out this facility. No, not at all. Machine to another machine to another machine.
And we leased a lot of it.
Yeah.
We leased a lot of it. It was the franchise sales that really started funding. And how do you get franchise sales?
With not a whole lot of data.
I mean, there was a lot of times. I mean, it was like, if we don't make this sell this week, then we're having to pull out of our own pockets to reinvest in the company and doing capital calls, which isn't great for partnerships, you know. And I was like, I'm all in. Like, I'll keep throwing in money all day, but some of my partners aren't. I bought all of them out now. But it was like, no, I don't want to. Like, when are we going to turn a profit? I'm like, I'm not worried about a profit. I'm worried about an empire. Like, we're going to sell the sucker. We're going to do 1,000 stores. We're
a year or two in, and you're already talking about the P word. And if you've got a vision like you've got, you're not talking about profiting for, you know, a few years, because you're going to keep throwing so much money back. But by the time you take a check, it could be tens and tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars, right?
Yeah. And I mean, that was the vision, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's all for the future. It's all for the future. So anyways, that's kind of how we did it, was slowly balancing it, going up and up. And then we brought on a production guy, because to make it the most simple franchise model for the franchisee, I mean, that's what it takes, is $2 million and an incredible team. But this guy built American Crafts. They do paper crafts. They want to do food crafts. So like, you melt chocolate, you put it in a pretzel or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
They did $70 million last year in just food crafts alone. He built the whole program, hired everybody, sourced all the equipment, 2 years. So I'm like, I need that guy. And then now we're a logistics company now too, right? Because now we have to deliver the dough. So how do you do logistics? I don't know. Well, we found Ivan, who had a logistics company, just sold it. They did $50 million last year. So I'm like, Ivan, come run logistics for us. You know, so it was really just getting key players in each business, in each category, because you're not going to find one person that knows logistics, food production, and franchising. Right?
Yeah.
So let's get three key people to do all of those, and then we can run with it. And then now, I mean, it's still a balancing act. Right now, we've sold 130 franchises that we've collected fees on, so that's definitely helped. You know, we have money in the bank, but we still have a lot of expenses.
Yeah.
Like, we signed our warehouse in November before we were franchised. This warehouse is going to produce for about 30 stores. That's going to give us some room to grow.
Yeah.
Right. Then, I mean, 2 months later, before we even really started the build out, we'd already outsold that store. And we're like, and then we open up our first store, and that's selling twice as much as what we planned for. And we're like, okay, so now this 30 warehouse is really only a 15 store warehouse. Yeah. Then we just got another warehouse that should do about 150 stores. And I'm already like kicking myself in
and
the
first,
like, that was too small.
The first investor.
Now we're already going to have to build the
130. We haven't even started. We don't have the keys yet.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I can say this, right? The first investor on that store made his money back in the first couple months.
Yeah. He did an SBA loan and he killed it with it.
Yeah. That's so cool, man. What I love about this, just to highlight too, all of this, like the people, your advisory board, it all really stems from, if you think about it, really, you being open when you really wanted to be resistant. You know what I mean? Like that first job at Cutco, like, screw that, dude. I'm not working for free for 40 freaking hours, you know? And then your brother's advice to be like, you know, start automating instead of just knocking doors and trying to be the machine yourself the whole time. And then go into the Ignite, which is now stemmed into all these things. It's like, I can totally, I just want to highlight that, because I feel like a lot of people, they stay resistant to things. And sometimes that resistance really is a sign that, like, okay, you know, I need to be open. This can lead to something, because I've experienced that too, where it's like, you know, oh man, I don't want to do this. Or I have my guard up for whatever reason, but for whatever reason, I put my guard down and just decided to be open and just go into it. And then it opens your mind, and then you buy into it, and then boom, it just leads to all these crazy things, you know? So I think that's really cool. And I wanted to highlight that, because a lot of people just stay resistant.
Yeah, no,
I mean, out of fear, you know?
And I kind of looking back, like, why am I like that? I'm like, you probably know more than me. You know, like, if you've been in this longer than me, it's pretty comforting to hand the ball off, you know? And I think a lot of people feel it the opposite. But if you have the right person,
when you know, then it's actually a relief.
It is.
It's a relief. Now, when if you're handing the ball off to somebody that you don't have confidence in,
and you feel as though you got to look over their shoulder and micromanage them, then their resume doesn't show that they're maybe the right person for the job. And you're actually trying to grow an individual into a role, which in some cases, that's our responsibility as owners, is to help people also grow, right? Yeah. And so there's this delicate balance. But I also want to highlight the fact that, you know, in one of our companies, we did that. There was a homegrown leader and over at 60 Day Culture's doing an amazing job. Right. And we tried to do that with Easier Accounting, and it just didn't necessarily work, right? We try to give the internal people an opportunity to grow and rise up to the occasion. In some cases, it can work. Accounting is a much tougher business. There's a lot more moving parts and X's and O's that, you know, or I guess I's that need to be dotted and T's that need to be crossed, so to speak. And so we gave the people the opportunity, but I will tell you flat out, I mean, it's not like we're doing anything different from when we gave them the opportunity versus bringing in the CEO. We're still doing accounting back then and now, but it's different because of the individual's perspective that we now brought on a couple of weeks ago to start as a CEO. Because when you're scaling, you have problems, right? You guys have had problems. He said, hey, he alluded to, hey, we had to sell that franchise so that we had money so that we could address the problem, right? Every business, their only problem really is scaling. Either you're not scaling because you're brand new, or you're scaling too quick. Yep. The business doesn't trickle in at the perfect rate with the perfect amount of money, well, with the perfect, you know.
And it really comes from either a lack of knowledge or a lack of effort. And so if you're putting in effort and you just don't have the lack of knowledge, and you have the lack of knowledge, you're just going to keep hitting that wall, dude. Mm-hmm. If you have all the knowledge, but you have lack of effort, you're going to keep obviously hitting the wall. So, okay, well, I have effort, but I don't have the knowledge. Let's bring in people that have the knowledge.
Yeah. You know? And so that's what I want to highlight is the fact that the dude is smart enough to surround himself with A players because the dream is so big that he's willing to say no to money today, because the pot at the end of that rainbow is way too big to say yes to a couple bucks today or shortcut something. The question that I have for the listeners is, how many times have you shortcutted something for the immediate result now versus, you know, the long-term play? Once you start playing the long-term game, it's completely different. You're okay spending the money. You're okay bringing in the A players. The vision's way too big to make sacrifices or cut corners, right?
Yep.
And so I want to highlight that, because I believe what you've been able to accomplish just within the last year or so since we talked to you, a lot of that is credited to you and your ability to surround yourself with those type of people. But we have to highlight those type of people. In other words, surround yourself. And he said something earlier in the podcast as well. Well, you can't have the logistics guy do the logistics, the production, the franchise, you know, all of that. But how many times in our businesses do we try to have that one person wear three or four hats because we're just being cheap?
Yep.
And then and then we get upset at them for something that didn't get done or this, that, the other. But in reality, we have to take ownership of that because we're the ones putting them in a position to fail, because we're not putting them in a position to win or perform at a high level, because we're doing things or forcing them to do things that maybe aren't their thing, right?
And I think because I have a background in sales, I was able to do it, right? Because I'm selling a vision. Mm. Like when we spoke a year ago, we didn't have any of that, right?
Yeah.
But I'm like, that's what I'm going to do. That's my vision. I go tell 100 people and some people jump on board with it, you know, because I'm selling them on that vision of like, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Then it's like, well, can we afford this person? I think we can't afford not to have them. I don't care if I have don't have the money in the account.
Get the fuck out.
Because it's like, I can't sell franchises if I don't have a logistics guy.
Yeah.
I can't sell franchises without an advisor and a CEO. And like, I think of what is the most sellable product. And then I'm going to go make sure that that we have that sellable product. And then I'm going to go sell it. And if I don't have, and the clout that people bring, it's like, maybe this person's a little bit
You've been better. Doing it the whole time now that I analyze it, because you got that one person, then you sold the second person on the one person, then you sold the third person on the other two people.
It's just slowly going up like
And then
this.
You sold the franchisees on the fact that you have these three people in your organization, and that's why we're going to, you know.
Yeah.
And so you just kept.
And I knew that. Cool. And I'm like, if I get these people, I'm going to sell these franchises.
Yeah.
So it's kind of chicken or the egg. How do I sell a franchise without a team? Well, how do I get a team without money?
Right.
Well, I'm going to hire the team. And I'm going to get money quick.
And your long-term vision sells people on a long-term vision. Like, dude, I mean, monetarily, no, we can't afford that person right now, but that money stuff will work itself out, right? Like,
It's
when they're bought in on the long-term vision too, they're like, well, dude, this has a big payday at the end of it. I don't need $2 million a year right now. Like I could work for this, especially people that have accomplished already.
I was going to say, you know, that's when, like, you know, you're with the right people is right. When they can have the mindset of like, yeah, this is, I'm in it for the long term too.
That's how you really know you're lesson.
With the right people.
We just hired another, so that we're doing a franchise production logistics. I just hired another CEO for another brand that we're doing.
Right.
Cause we have you have this gourmet cookie market. And the only way that it exists is if you spend labor on decorating the cookie. Well, we have the first gourmet cookie, multi-flavored cookie that requires zero labor.
Right.
You know, you can have that peanut butter chocolate fudge cookie in your own house. I just give you the cookie puck. So we've had a lot of people, Jackson's and Maverick and Extra Mile and a lot of other franchise brands as well. Holy Shakes is another one. And they're all like, let us sell your cookie. Well, I didn't want a dirty dough cookie because that's our franchising brand. Mm. I wanted a smaller cookie so the price is less. I wanted a different name. No toppings, no drizzles. So we're not actually competing. Hopefully it's just expanding the cookie market, but nobody's going to go into the Maverick and then not go into a dirty dough.
Well,
even though it's a similar cookie, it doesn't look like at all. It's half the size and all that. So anyways, we just hired he was the CEO of BlendTech.
Yeah. Oh, okay. The blenders, right.
The blenders. And he was with them during their rapid growth. And it was like 2 or 3 years. They went from 60 to 130 million.
Yeah.
It's like, and they're selling in Walmarts, you know, so it's, let's hire people that have been there, done that. Mm. Let's hire to where we're going rather than where we're at. So we just hired him maybe a month ago and that's already taking off. We have pre-sales in tons of different,
Well, to me, I look at it stores. like a Pepsi owns how many other sodas, you know, or a Coca-Cola, how many other sodas, you know, it's the same thing. But if anything, it's just it's just more opportunities to make money. It's not that they're competing against each other, but they kind of are. People are going to have options anyways. You might as well be two options, of the five options or whatever, or three, you know.
And what it does
exactly
is now we have our production and logistics servicing two companies, and that's going to lower cost all around.
Yeah, for both sides.
If we can do more production out of the same facility, our franchisees now have lower. And then this other brand also has lower cost. And then somebody can go into maybe a convenience store, grab a small cookie, no toppings, no drizzles. They don't rotate weekly. And they're like, oh, this gourmet cookie, you know, that's a different customer that's walking into a dirty dough to buy a $4 cookie compared to a $2.50 cookie in a convenience store. Mm-hmm. And then now they're maybe more interested in cookies. And then they see a dirty dough. And they're like, oh, I'm going to go over there.
Yeah.
Right. But the branding, everything is completely separate. But we did want to do that. Really to service the franchisees, we think we can
lower their costs
and then also expand the cookie market. So if you want a cheap cookie, let's get you in here and then sell you on the gourmet cookie that actually looks good and has all the toppings, the decorations.
It's like the Cadillacs, bro. They've got like the SLEs and the CTSs and there's levels, right? You could buy the Cadillac at $35,000, but you also might be able to buy that a different car that's got the same emblem. You know, for $65,000, right? All you're doing is covering your price points and getting more of the market share towards you, whether they're cheap or whether they're willing to go all out, right?
Yeah, so now we kind of have that built out. And now it's just like, let's run with it. This has such big potential that let's freaking go all in. So it's like production logistics, whatever production and shipping needs that we have based on our projections, increase that by 50% and buy the trucks and the equipment for 50% higher, because it's like, again, I don't care about the profit right now at all. We don't need to be profitable for a few years. And I mean, right now we are sitting on a great profit for this year because we're selling so many franchises.
Yeah.
But it's like, get rid of the money, you know, like let's build the infrastructure to make this as simple as we can for our franchisees, because that's the goal. And kind of going in, taking a step back, the goal of Dirty Dough has nothing to do with cookies. I didn't do cookies because I love cookies. To this day, I've never mixed a batch of cookies. I've never scooped flour. I don't know how to do any of that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you're supposed to pat it or you level off or the air bubble. I don't know.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with cookies. It's really a mental health focus. So like our cookies, it's what's on the inside that matters most. And then we're building, like, that's the messaging. If you go into a dirty
dough. I've seen that. Yeah. I think that's awesome.
And then we're building wellness centers in schools. So K-12 schools, we're converting old classrooms into a wellness center, which is a spot for kids to come in 10, 15 minutes, get educated on how to be proactive with your mental health. How to do breathing exercises to change your physiological state, how to, you know, deal with anxiety, how to deal with a bully, depression. It's like, bullies are going to exist. This isn't a safe space. You're going to get your shit knocked out of you as soon as you walk out the door. Let's teach you how to you know,
swing back,
right? Yeah,
you know, we're having fighting classes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wellness centers.
The wellness center's got boxing gloves as you walk in. Like, wait a minute, you know.
So, like, that's the primary purpose of Dirty Dough. Cool. And then the secondary purpose of Dirty Dough is to lower the barrier of entry to entrepreneurship. I love entrepreneurship. I love sales. I love all of that. So, to be an entrepreneur, I broke it down to four things. You need a game plan. You need money. You need time. You need expertise.
Yeah.
The game plan is provided in a very, very simple franchise model. This model is working. Okay, yeah. So check. The money, we're half the cost of the biggest competitor to open up one of ours. So
how didn't you take a check from us when you were here a year ago?
we weren't raising. But that's now, you know, you can come in and it's not that expensive to own a franchise. You can do an SBA loan and you can get in with $40,000 to $60,000, right?
Yeah.
And own a business. And that's how you get those quick ROIs.
Yeah.
Or even 30, right? And most people don't know that. And now, like, that's what we're providing is a lower cost. So if you've never thought of owning a business, maybe you'll think about it now. And then you need expertise. I just admitted that I've never mixed any cookie dough. None of our franchisees will ever have to mix cookie dough, right? They don't ever have to worry about ratios and how it's being done. They're just
unlock the key to the door.
Put the cookie on the shelves and sell them, man.
I'm going to train you how to, I mean, you could go to the St. George store. We just opened, right? But
yeah.
You walk in there, grab a speed rack. It holds cookie sheets. Walk into the walk-in cooler, grab 15 cookies, place them 3x5, roll it out, open up the oven, put it in, press start. You don't have to program the oven. It's all the same time, temperature, fan speed.
Yeah.
Once it comes out, serve it to the customer. Like, how are you going to mess that up?
Right.
Maybe you sneeze on the cookies. I don't know. But, like, you don't need to be an expert baker, right? There's no baking involved. So we've greatly lowered that. And then the time required, the biggest time commitment in business is employees. And we've decreased the amount of employees by half because you don't have mixers. You're not mixing small batches. You're not hand weighing anything.
What that tells me is that you have... If your margins are there and you don't have the same cost for employees, maybe you know, the individuals that are the franchisees have the ability to pay, you know, their employees a little bit more so that they have consistency, right? Like stores that have to have like, you know, 15 employees at a $12 an hour, $14 an hour rate because of the model that it is like fast food does that, right? McDonald's workers got $12, $14, $15 an hour workers in there. But if they had $30 an hour workers in there, it wouldn't probably be as disgusting, you know?
Yep.
But to be able to cut down on a lot of expenses and have your profit margin go up, you guys have the opportunity to potentially bring in better talent and have more consistency with your talent because of the wages that you might be able to pay because you don't have these other expenses, right?
Yeah, and I mean... So those are the four points of entrepreneurship that we're lowering.
Right.
But now when you get somebody into entrepreneurship, man, wouldn't I feel terrible if somebody took out a second mortgage on their house and then this franchise didn't work, right?
Right.
So the first 65 franchises we sold was before we opened our first franchise.
Okay.
All of those people had to pay cash. Because if you have credited. These stores are around 230, right? You have 230 loans, cash, you're a big boy, you can make a decision, right? But if you're getting an SBA loan, getting an equity, you know, HELOC out of your home. Like we weren't selling to any of those people. We wanted to prove the model more before we can actually say, this is our goal, you know, to lower the barrier of entrepreneurship, but we haven't tested it yet. Let us test it. And then we'll start selling to those people. Mm. And now that we've tested it a little bit more, right, we have 5 stores open now and they're all doing really good. It's how do we still lower the risk even further? Well, what's more risk? Because we're still a new brand, right?
Yeah.
Well, if we can operate at half the square footage, then your lease payment's half, right? And we can operate at half the square footage because we don't need mixers. You don't need to store raw ingredients. So that's a big burden when you're like our Pleasant Grove store is opening today, $1,800 a month, $725. We were talking about the Jimmy John's. We're next to the busiest Jimmy John's that group of 27 Jimmy John's,
you know, owners. They
own 27 Jimmy John's and we're right next door to all of them. This is their number one location. Then it's next door to a Domino's as well. Second busiest Domino's in the state, 725 square feet, $1,800. It's like, that's a lot less risky for a new entrepreneur to jump into, right?
Yeah.
And then half the labor, you can operate one of these stores with one person opening the store, 2 people in the middle of the day, and then one person closing it. Now, if sales start shooting up like they have been, you need a little bit more than that. But like,
which is a good base problem level to
management,
have.
You can have one person running the store all day and that's it. So like, if shit hits the fan, if times get tough, like, you know, all you need is one employee. not
and
that
if
bad.
Times really got yeah. that tough, you could be the one employee if yeah. you're owning the franchise.
So like
right?
let's reduce this risk as low as possible for the franchisees, also while making a unique product for them. Yeah. So these other cookie companies can't copy us unless they're willing to do what we're doing, which not many people are willing to spend that kind of money, build that kind of team before you even have a model. But we knew if we did it, then it's really going to separate us from everybody else. It was a little, not a little bit more work. It was a lot more work, a lot more risk in the front. But now it's set up our franchisees to lower that risk, right? Like there's all these cookie companies popping up. Yeah. Nobody can make the cookies that we are making. Nobody yeah. can operate with the same labor that we're doing. Nobody has less waste than us. Yeah. Right? We have a really, really good model. So again, while as these new franchisees that have never owned businesses, and most pretty much everybody does, because again, we're still hesitant to sell to those type of people.
Yeah.
But that is the goal.
Yeah.
Start selling to those types of people and make it as robust as possible. So maybe we have a brand that 45 years later, that franchise is still in the company. I mean, and it's still in that family, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's providing generational wealth. And Mrs. Fields has been around for 45 years.
Right.
Yeah. Multiple hundred locations. They do a centralized production model. Another company, mainly out of the East Coast, Great American Cookie Company, multiple hundred locations, started in 77, 45 years ago, right? Jill, our CEO, her brand is now 39 years old. She's had franchisees selling Maui Wowie smoothies for 39 years. That is cool, right?
Yeah.
That's changing generational wealth, and that's a big goal of Dirty Dough.
Right.
What I see also, the difference between just like a regular business is not a franchise if you're building it out versus what you've been detailing is what's unique and what the difference that I see is you are forced to think about others while you're building and you haven't seen a dollar yet because you're building a model that others can benefit from. You see what I'm saying? And yeah. a lot of people on an initial business, they're trying to build a business that they can benefit from. And so when you switch it like that and you're thinking about others, you're able to operate at a whole different level, like what you're talking about, with a lot more clarity and a lot more purpose, because it's not 100% just about yeah. Bennett, right? And so that's what I think is really, really cool.
Yeah,
what
I don't
you've
think about
talked
that at
about.
All.
Yeah.
Not because I'm not selfish. It's, right. it's because I am selfish. And I know the only way for my business to succeed is for the franchisees to kill it. So having the sales background of like, what is going to sell my business?
Right.
It's going to be them. Franchisees that are happy, that are profitable.
Right.
So I don't need to take a dollar.
Well, it's
as long as they're successful, then that means I'm successful. And the vision is 1,000 stores and 1,000 wellness centers.
Yeah.
That's going to change the lives of millions of kids.
Yeah.
Right.
100%.
Like, that's the real vision. And even if we don't, I don't know. I mean, money's great. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's,
but I'm kind of past the money. I'm like, let's just build this cool shit.
Yeah.
I sold the solar company, kind of went through like a personal crisis of like,
yeah, of course
I'm working long hours, I'm working the weekends, blah, blah, because I'm going to build this company and then I'm going to have all this money and then I'm going to have free time. Then I'm going to go travel with my family, spend more time with them. And then I'm going to be happy. Then I sell the company and
you had all the time in the world, bro.
Give me 2 weeks and I'm already working weekends. And I'm yeah. like, why? And then I'm like, I need to snap out of it right now because I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I mean, I always tell myself when I hit XYZ, then I'm going to be with my family. Then I'm going to be happy. And I'm like, no, I'm going to be happy now. And like I started seeing a therapist and that what got me into like mental health, not because I had anxiety, depression, any of that. It was like, how do I be more fulfilled? How do I be more happy?
Mm-hmm.
I've always been a happy person, but like that kind of changed the trajectory of what I'm going for. Yeah. And now that's my focus. Like the sale of the company was really cool and I felt great. But man, who cares if you feel good?
The high was high, and then all of a sudden, it's like a roller coaster. The slow click up top, and then you're up top. The view's good, and then you mentally were on a decline for a minute.
You're right back to normal.
Yeah,
working long hours and telling you and stressing, and I'm like, I'm done with that.
Yeah,
I want to build something I'm passionate about. I want to change other. So my mission statement, and which is now adopted, you know, the Dirty Dough mission statement is to find joy and fulfillment despite life's dirtiness in ourselves and others. So be happy, be fulfilled. Cool. Fulfillment is focusing on something bigger than yourself. Despite life's dirtiness, don't wait to sell your company. Don't wait for life to be perfect. Like life's dirty, but don't let that stop you from being happy and fulfilled. Now, focus on yourself first and then help as many people as you can. And that's what I'm after. So that's why I don't really care about like the money. I just
You don't have to care about the money, because when you know that you're doing all the right things, you already know all the right things will happen when they're supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Right. So you're just focusing on the process rather than the result, because you know that
it's going to come.
You're just that confident and that sure that if you do the right thing, that it'll all be okay.
Yeah, 100%. And if it's not okay, then what? Then I'm going to go knock some doors. You know, right? It all fails. You tell me what to go sell.
Till the day he dies.
I could go make multiple six figures in any industry. Just give me a freaking product to sell. I'll go knock
doors. You know what we should do? Go back to the old podcast when somebody, I don't remember what it was, when they said, what should a youngster do? You were talking about one of your son's friends. You said, go get a job in sales or whatever. You'll always be okay. We should go back to that clip and then go back to Bennett right here. He's like, I can go back to sales. I'll always be okay.
Who doesn't want to hire a salesperson that says, I'll come to you. I'm like, I'll sell your guys' accounting services. Yeah. Don't pay me unless I'm successful.
Yeah.
Like, who's not going to take right. that?
100%.
And then I know how to sell, and I'm going to go sell more than anybody else has ever sold. And I'm going to make great money, and I'm going to make the company great money, and it's a win-win. So going back to worst case scenario, what if everything goes to shit and all of this, it's like,
I'm
not going to You'll die. Figure it out. I'm not You'll figure die. It out, just I'm like
gonna,
you always have.
I'm going to be fine.
I think you will be fine. And that's always given me a lot of comfort too, man. It's just like, you know what, dude? I can always go back to selling shit and making a good living for my family. You know what I mean? Yep. So it gives you the ability to go all in on whatever your vision is. But I think that the whole story is a great lesson for any entrepreneur. Most entrepreneurs are pretty much visionaries, right? And so if they can wrap their vision around, how can I create a situation to where it's harder for people to fail than win? You know what I mean? Like, then dude, like, it's a win-win situation. Like, you guys have created a system that makes it so hard for the franchisee to fail. You've made it hard for the employee that's inside that franchisee to fail, and inside their office. It's like, man, the freaking machine does it all. They got to freaking literally put them out and take the freaking money. You know what I mean? It's like pretty hard to fail. And then the franchisee, it's like, dude, you guys have cut costs by mass producing for other companies. And then, their cost is low. They don't have to make it in-house. Like, it's like, you've made it pretty hard to fail. And I think that if you can wrap your head around any entrepreneur or visionary, whether you're building a team or a big thing that wants to go and have franchises, whatever it is, if you can make it so hard for them to fail by giving them those tools, it's like, you can't not win, dude. So I'm pretty sure you're not gonna have to worry about knocking doors again.
You look at our team though, and kind of the feedback that I got from a good amount of people are, you don't need that person yet. You're too small. You don't need that. I'm like, well, how am I gonna get big if I don't have the right people? And it's always been, we've always been definitely heavy staffed, because I would rather waste money and be kind of going back to the, I would rather order a truck a few months in advance and make payments a few months without using it than like, oh shit, we don't have a truck to produce cookies.
Right. That's another
It's like, I don't care about the money. It's like, let's just, our payroll's pretty high now. I just just had our financial review and we're paying $70,000 every other week.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, we just opened up our, 2 days ago we had 3 stores open.
Now
we have 5.
Today.
Right. And
adds another couple.
But it's like, I would rather overstaff, overproduce, and lose money, not necessarily
doing it the right way.
But it's like, we can't succeed if we don't have an incredible team, and we have a lot of people, and we work. I still work with a lot of people in the Philippines, and that's been, you get a high level person and you give them a full time assistant at $5 to $7 an hour, and they're, this person that you have to pay more than six figures to has now increased their production by 50%, right? With you just spend an extra $10,000 a year, $15,000 a year. So we've also built that model. So we have a pretty big team, even though, and a pretty high payroll, but for the amount of people, I think we're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
But I've definitely been like, no, don't hire that person yet. Don't hire that person yet. And I'm like, we could wait 2 months, but like, what's 2 months in the grand scheme of things?
Yeah, but at the same time, what if they're not around in 2 months or this, that, the other? When you have an opportunity and it's right there in front of you, the circumstance, the environment, doesn't necessarily matter what it is. If they can add value, it's a yes or no question. Can they bring value to the team and help you accomplish the end result, the mission? And if the answer is yes, and it might be a month early or 2 months early, hell, it might be 6 months early. It doesn't matter. Get them on the bus.
Yeah.
And secure that seat.
And I've battled with that with some other people, even on the team, like, we don't need this person yet. Let's wait. And then we wait. And then it's like, we have 300 franchising courts. How the hell do we keep up with this?
Yeah.
We don't even have a freaking salesman because we waited, because the salesman we wanted $20,000 more per year. And now we just probably lost $200,000 because we didn't have a salesperson, right? So now we have 4 full-time salespeople, and it's like, do we need another one? But 2 months ago, we had zero.
Yeah.
But we waited too long because the other thing is you hire somebody, well, they need a month or so to catch up.
Yeah.
Right? So you kind of do need to hire.
Well, that's what they say. When you're feeling the pain and you feel like you need to hire,
too late.
You're already too late, right? You should have done that 3 months ago or whatever it is. One thing I just want to unpack before we wrap up, just because you touched on a topic about mental health and starting to see a therapist and investing into you, right? Which is super important, right? We've been very open about, you know, if that's something, invest in that area, right? Yep. If like it's super, super important. What were some of the takeaways from, you know, dealing with that and seeing that the individual guy, gal, whoever it was that was the therapist, what were some of the habits or things that they started talking to you about to turn that on its head so that you weren't dealing with some of those same issues? What changed for you? Was it just a perspective shift or did your routines change or what?
I mean, both.
Yeah.
The perspective like, okay, well, why do you say your family is most important, but you spend all your time on your job, right? And it's like, I don't know. That's why I'm freaking here.
Yeah.
Help me out with that. And then you're diving into like, why do I do sales? Well, I like people to like me. And if I can sell you and you agree to buy my product, that means you probably like me. And that makes me feel good, right?
Yeah.
And just making all of those realizations, I'm like, oh, that's why I act. Once you understand your behavior of why your behavior doesn't match with your beliefs, and then you can change it. But if you don't know, if you don't understand it, how are you going to change it? So I'm fascinated by like my psyche, right? Yeah. And like, what's going on in my brain and how do I change that? And then a lot of those were habits. Okay. Now we do a scheduled date night every Friday, right? Like every Friday, it's always a date night. We have a sitter. Every night at 6 p.m. we do dinner together. Cause the other thing was, okay, now I'm done working, but I'm not present with my family. Right. And it's like, okay, we'll make sure that you set a time aside and it's dinner and you put your phone down. Right. So a lot of these habits have changed. And then same thing, I mean, it's made our relationship husband and wife way better as well. Cause then it's like, well, what about your wife? Like, what is she doing? And it's like, oh, she takes care of the kids. Well, does she want to take care of the kids? Yeah. She's an excellent mom, but does she want to do something else? Yeah. But she takes care of the kids. Well, hire somebody to babysit, you know, hire a nanny and let her go pursue her things. Right. And like these little things, like I wasn't focused on that. So
it's hard to when you're in the weeds and you're dealing with your own shit. Yeah.
Just like I got a business coach through Apex, right? I'm like, I don't need a business coach. I got an incredible team. No, of course I need a business coach, you know?
Yeah.
And man, that's been so helpful. And this is a mental coach, right? Yeah. They're called a therapist, but it's a mental coach.
That's all it is.
You tell me I'm seeing a mindset coach. Everybody's going to be like, yeah, man, that's
hell
cool.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Say therapist.
I see a therapist. Like, you're like, oh shit. Yeah.
Like,
what's wrong
anyways,
with you?
Anyways, did you see the game last night?
I've never had any shame in it, dude. Like I've had some blowback from that, you know?
Really?
Like, yeah. It's people like, what the hell do you need a therapist for? You know what I mean? It's like,
well, are you perfect?
Like, yeah.
Why don't
you? Well, and I've also seen in the groups, like, oh, there's a lot of shitty therapists out there and stuff like that. And like, I don't believe in therapy. I believe in getting a, you know, whatever, performance coach. And it's like, well, I have a therapist and it's done nothing but great for me. So,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But yeah, I've seen that.
I think that because that, you know, like the reason why he's so willing to talk about it, because he has a result from it, right? Yeah, he has 100%. Proof that it works. So it's like, I don't care what you think. Like, I did it for me and it worked for me. So I'm just telling you what I did. Yeah. You do whatever you want with that information.
Right.
And I think it's the same with you. It's like, it doesn't matter. The truth is the truth is the truth. And if you say that I did X and it helped me, like, take it. Take that information from somebody that's been here and went here with this thing being the common denominator.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know why it's always been such a weird thing, though, for people to...
Well, it's
almost, I think, like, it's, you can't handle your own business.
It's all reactive.
Like, yeah.
Like, mental health is reactive. And that's why, like, physical health, everybody knows you need to be proactive. Mental health.
Right.
And what are people after in this life? I mean, what I'm after is joy and fulfillment, right?
Yeah, happiness. Peace, happiness. Right. Yeah.
How are you going to get that? Like, yes, you need to go to the gym, and that's a big piece. But if you only had to choose one, would you work on your mind or would you work on your body?
Mm. Right.
Right. Your mind. But nobody's working on their mind. It's just like...
I think that's an afterthought. To me, I think it goes hand in hand. I think you reach your mind best through your body.
No, you need them both. You can't do meditation and not exercise, right?
Yeah,
right. But I'm just saying we're really good.
You can be the best shape. You could be the best shape human in the world, but feel fucking this big and just feel like a piece of shit.
Yep.
So, but you could also be a little bit overweight or whatever it is, and maybe not have the beach body. But mentally, you're the happiest person on the planet, like a fucking Buddha, little chubby belly, you know, and he's good, right? And then you got some dude that's ripped that still's just not ripped enough.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
I mean, it's if you're about being happy, why aren't you working on your mind? Right? Why aren't you working on your mindset, your beliefs, understanding what you think and exploring your consciousness?
Yeah.
That's what I'm going, you know, I'm getting really big into that. And man, it's been a really cool journey.
Yeah. What a journey.
Yeah. My first therapist said that to me actually a long time ago. He's like, man, I got so many people in here that are like super fit. And they're like, I finally realized, like, you know, why am I putting so much work into my body if my mind's messed up? And so they look at their therapy sessions and the homework that they get there as their workout for their mind, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, then I get all these people that it's like they work out and they, but they won't hire a therapist. And he's like, you know, same result. Yeah. And you're still not going to be happy. You have to work on both. You have to work out your mind and you have to work out your body.
100%.
Yeah.
No, dude. What a cool podcast.
Yeah. It's good, man. What a cool business and vision you've brought to life and still bringing to life, dude. Yeah. It's super cool, man.
Thank you.
Dude, congratulations, man. Well deserved. Yeah. You had the vision. Your brother taught you a couple little things or two with the, with the solar thing. That's what's impressive about you is that you're just, you know, you're open and you're willing to learn from anybody and everybody. When a lot of people that have seen a little bit of success, like the outsiders, well, why are you hiring this person? Why are you doing that? They just don't understand. Maybe their ego would get in the way and be like, I don't need that. I don't need that. Like you said, at one point, your brain teased you. Oh, like I've sold a company before. Why do I need this guy? You know? And so because that guy has the experience that he doesn't have, that's why he needed that guy. And that's why that individual has been obviously a huge, huge, huge factor in adding those additional pieces that has helped you see the success that you've seen. And, you know, we'll probably have a follow-up with Bennett in 3 years if he'll give us time and he's a billionaire and he exited his 10,000 Dirty Dough franchises and, you know, he has one next to another just because it's so busy and the line's out the door or whatever, right?
Like never.
Almost like a fucking Chick-fil-A, right? They like, no, one line's not enough. Let's do two. They can pretty much put two Chick-fil-A's side by side and that shit would still be out to the road, right? And so that's Dirty Dough's future. So I'm calling it right now. Man, we appreciate you coming down, jumping on the podcast. Hope the grand opening in St. George goes well tonight for that individual. He seems like a really cool dude. He said he'd stop by and drop a gift to us. In other words, a Dirty Dough gift, you know, cookies. Get dirty or whatever. But how do people connect with you if they want to reach out to you? They've got questions. Maybe they want to talk about franchising or whatever it is, right? Yeah, kind of like the Jeff Fenster thing. You saw him, you reached out, and he was able to serve. So how would somebody do that to you or with you if that's something they wanted to do?
Yeah, my website, bennettmaxwell.com, BennettMaxwell.
That's how he's made it. He's got his own damn website with his name.
Yeah. Talking about my brother, man. He created that for me. He knows how to do all that.
I think Kel owns TrevorCowley.com because when he bought KelGoodman.com, he just bought mine too.
If you go on there though, you know, there's a link to the franchising. There's a, you know, follow me on social media, anything like that, and try to post every day. Just to try to provide as much value as I can.
I think you should. You talked about a podcast earlier. I mean, I think that you speak well enough and that you've had enough experience. I think you do really well with it.
Sure.
I think that you should pursue that and then put that as your next link on, you know, the website.
I do want to do it. I just need your guys' cool setup here.
Yeah. Well, you're going to have enough money that your setup will look 1,000 times better than this within the next year. So anywho, guys, I hope you enjoyed today's show. Bennett was a gem for coming in and sharing the information that he did. It was information that I think that me and Kel learned from as well. So we appreciate that. Make sure you reach out to him if you have any questions, if you're wanting to franchise and have this model that's been simplified, just fill up your bank account, reach out to the dude and he'd be happy to help so that you can pay for another machine so that you know, like all that fun stuff. So guys, if you enjoyed today's shows, make sure you share the show, review the show, all that good stuff. Other than that, kick ass, take care. We'll see you next week.